Good morning. The Senate Finance Committee will come to order. It's Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022. For the record, we do have a quorum. We have two bills, members. Senate File 2861, our substitute teacher bill, Senator Dornick, and then Senate File 2302, the nurse licensure compact is Senator Nelson. There are fiscal notes in your packet, and we will focus on those fiscal notes. And for the record, it's the first time of Senator Dornick has been in front of the Finance Committee, and he brought donuts, so please help yourself. That's tradition, so appreciate that very much, Senator You're Dornick. Welcome. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you,
Senator Dornick, Senate File 2861.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We have an amendment first, the A7 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll offer the A7 amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen moves the A7 amendment. Senator Dornick to the amendment.
The employing district or school requested from Pelsby any relevant hiring information concerning the person. So just to make sure there's no bad actors getting in the substitute. So it's just a check.
So Senator Dornick, can you just give us a brief summary or start out on your bill, and then we'll incorporate the amendment once we understand what the bill is?
Yes, Madam Chair. So this legislation addresses the shortage of this substitute teachers have been facing in Minnesota for quite some time. And it was written by Mark Raymond out of Austin. So he wrote this bill 3 years ago, and it's addressing being able to get into the classroom and help out. So it's a pilot program. It gives the schools options. Pelsby Section 2 is their section, and Section 3 was the part written by Mark Raymond. And so it's been passed through the education and going on to the floor, hopefully. But there is a fiscal note that we're addressing here today.
Okay. So the A7 amendment is before us. Again, what does the A7 amendment do? Senator Dornick?
So if there is a substitute teacher that has been in a school and he had some disciplinary action, that information goes to Pelsby, and then they keep record of it. So then if he would try to go to another school, the district has to call Pelsby, and so that name would be, say, this guy has a disciplinary action. So just to keep those substitute teachers, if there's a bad one, out of the school system from
Thank
district
you.
To district.
Yes, and to the amendment, Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, having been involved in previous versions of these discussions, I know that this can get kind of intricate, and I'm a little concerned about the workability of this. I was wondering if someone from Pelsby was here to talk about the effect of the A7 on the process of doing this.
Senator Kent, we normally do not have anybody except from the agencies.
Well, this is the agency.
And we
Madam
have
Chair, that is involved.
We have Mr. Adoshi, the Director of Government Affairs for the Department of Ed, and that's all. I don't think we have anybody from Pelsby that is.
Well, if perhaps Mr. Uni can help clarify how this would work.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Adoshi.
Madam Chair, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Kent, for the opportunity. I do have some comments that I can provide later when the time is set up for public testimony, but to Senator Kent's question, I do believe, you know, we've been in conversations with Mr. Liuzzi from the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, who has more knowledge about the intricacies of how this works. But the way I understand it, to the amendment specifically, the way that I understand it, is that with an actual license, if Pelsby were to be able to issue an actual license, that would give them the authority to be able to retain any private personnel data that they would receive about any misconduct or any ethical violations, however rare those instances are. They would be able to retain that data, and then not only would they be able to retain that data, but then they would be able to share it with a district or charter that requests that information if for somebody that they're going to be able to hire. Without a license to be able to attach that data to, there are some strong questions that, and again, from what I understand with my discussions with Mr. Liuzzi from Pelsby, is that there are some strong questions about their ability or their legal authority to be able to retain that data without a license that they would issue for that individual, which, as I understand it, this bill currently does not allow.
Senator Kent,
we do have somebody from Pelsby here, and I'm just trying to get his name. Alex Liuzzi, if you would like to come up and testify. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Liuzzi. Am I saying it right?
You are. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Very good.
Alex Liuzzi, Executive Director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. Thank you, and thank you for the question. Mr. Uni is correct. We currently have the ability to track candidates through licensure. The Data Practices Act allows us to not only take data on licensed applicants, but then share that publicly. So a short call sub who might, let's say, have some discipline issues, maybe they were inappropriate texts with students, we're not only able to take action against that person's license, but then that action becomes public and we can share that with anyone. Anyone can see it through our website. We don't know what it looks like with in Section 3. These would be individuals who do not hold a license, and we believe that we have concerns that we can even take the data from districts if they share that with us, and then we definitely believe we can't then share that out with a district that asks for that information.
Okay, thank you, Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Liuzzi. And that is the concern that I had, that we are asking Pelsby to do something here, and obviously this is very important, and I appreciate the intentions behind this bill, but if we're asking an entity to do this, that they're not legally able to actually do it, that's problematic within the A7 amendment.
Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier, are full-time teachers' records kept with your department as well?
Mr. Liuzzi.
Madam Chair, yes, they are.
So any disciplinary, disciplinary action from someplace else would be recorded there. How long does that stay with the teacher?
Mr. Liuzzi.
Madam Chair, indefinitely. I believe our data retention records keep that. It might be 30 years. I would need to check to make sure, but it's a significant amount of time.
So, Madam Chair, just really quickly, and I know we're off finance here. That when somebody applies on the other side of the state, they can actually get a hold of you, and that record can actually be considered for employment?
Mr. Liuzzi.
Madam Chair, yes, they can.
Okay. Any further comments? Okay. We will head to the fiscal note after we take a vote on the A7 amendment. Okay, Senator Ingebrigtsen renews his. Senator Dornick, do you have any comments to this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this has been worked on with Pelsby for quite some time. In December, actually, Representative Mueller kind of got the language from Pelsby in Section 2, and we were really close to getting this agreed on. And then there was a couple ideas that they just kind of didn't like, and so we amended it. This is a second amendment brought up by some concerns. So both these amendments have been talked about through the me personally talking to some of the committee members on both the Republican and Democrat. So there's bipartisan support to this bill. So that's all I have to say. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dornick. Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen renews his motion on the A7 amendment. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I'm still not clear, though, from what what the Pelsby member was, board member, was saying to what Senator Kent was saying. In other words, does this do anything? Does this amendment change anything? Because if Pelsby doesn't have a record, if the person's not licensed, saying that they can pass on the information, I don't get how they have the information. I understand, Senator Dornick, you're trying to fix this, but I'm not sure that this fixes anything.
Senator Dornick.
So, Madam Chair, as I've mentioned, we have worked on this. It's my understanding that Pelsby has the information and that we could definitely cooperate with them to see exactly how we could make this work. I guess I'm a little confused why the information is on the permanent teacher or licensed teachers and this information couldn't be taken and used by telling us or telling those districts what they need. So I'm a little confused on why this wouldn't be available for those districts when they ask.
Mr. Luisi.
Madam Chair, it's currently the Data Practices Act. So Pelsby has authority over individuals who are licensed. It's the same for any board that holds a license over an individual. All that information on those licensed individuals is public. But Section 3 in this bill does not have these short call subs get licensed through our agency. They only have to work with the district, which means we can't legally collect their information and definitely can't share any information on these candidates. So that's the difference. And when we look at this, Section 2 is amazing. Senator Benson also has a short call sub bill, I believe, that was proposed recently that also does some really creative pieces with the finance aspect of this. I do think we're close. I think we have a lot of pieces in place. We just believe that having that license and to be able to track that individual is a key element of this. And if the issue is expediting, because I know there's been a lot of concerns about how long it takes Pelsby to issue a license, especially with background checks, we believe that there are ways for us to address that issue within Section 2 instead of doing away with the license through Pelsby.
So, ma'am.
Senator Marty.
So, Madam Chair, then, Mr. Luisi, then, in effect, if we took out Section 3, it would work.
Senator, Mr. Luisi, thank you.
Madam Chair, there are three bills that I currently know of in the Senate that are talking about short call subs, and I believe that if you take pieces of each of those three bills, you would have an amazing short call sub bill. And Section 2 in this bill is extremely close. Again, I mentioned Senator Benson's bill, and Senator Isaacson has a bill as well that does a few tweaks to Section 2 that would actually make license be issued faster through Pelsby. It does a few separate pieces that allows us to issue licenses faster.
Thank you, Mr. Luisi.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this was brought to us by the school districts, and it's just kind of frustrating that we don't trust our professional superintendents, teachers in district. And this Section 2 is the option one. Section 3 is option two. So we have two options. So let's let the school districts make the choices on this. And I think that I trust them. And we're working through this. It's really close. And many of the people that are substitute teachers are in the neighbor or in the community, and they see the problem. They want to help. And we're continue to not trust our local schools, our superintendent school boards. And it's just kind of frustrating to me. I've heard no negative on this. I have called or emailed all the superintendents in my district, talked to principals, just talked to a teacher yesterday, and she was very excited about this bill. So it continues to frustrate me of all the work that I've done and others, Representative Mueller, and we continue to just not trust those in the local districts. So I appreciate your concern, but again, I trust those local superintendents, school boards, and teachers to be able to watch over and to bring the right substitutes in there. And reminder, it's a three-year pilot program. And sometimes it gets frustrating when we just like, we've never done that way before. So again, I think this is a good compromise. Section 2, Pelsby, and Section 3 is something that we worked on for quite some time. So it's not like we just threw this together. This has been worked on for over a year now. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Dornick, thank you. I do think you do have some room to continue your work with Pelsby on this. Members, I would like to get this amendment on the bill to keep it moving to the floor, but there is an opportunity to continue some work. I see Senator Marty, you still have your hand up?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I hear what Senator Dornick's saying, and it's not a matter of not trusting the superintendents and others. It's a question that Section 3 makes it not work. And that's why I'm saying, why don't we take that out? And as he's saying, why don't we look at some other bills? That there are two other bills he mentioned that you could put together with this and make it work. So the third section, by taking out the licensure, then it means that the background check stuff and the previous history doesn't show up. So I keep wondering, he says he's trying to work on this. I'm saying, well, take out that section and put it together with some of the others from the other bills.
Well, Senator Marty, would you feel more comfortable with the bill if the amendment, the A7 amendment, did not go on?
I don't know. It seems to do nothing with Section 3 in the bill.
Senator DeCamp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was going to try to refocus this back to A7 because that is the issue before us right now. And, you know, this question about Section 3, I think it does is potentially problematic. Without the amendment, I think the amendment in itself, because that's the question before us, just doesn't work because it is instructing Pelsby to do something that they legally can't do because it violates Chapter 13. So my particular point right now is that this amendment is a problem, and it, you know, if it needs to go on, it needs more work because as it stands, as it is before us right now, we're hearing from Pelsby that they just simply can't do this.
Thank you. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Dornick, I'm looking at the amendment, and I'm looking at item C on 3C on your original bill. So if I understand, part of the concern is how will Pelsby have this information to share to the relevant school districts? And we'll have the discussion on Section 3, I think, after the amendment. But doesn't 3C make the amendment work by collecting that information, having a mandatory reporting of any disciplinary action?
Senator Dornick.
Madam Chair, yeah, that they must report. So, yeah, that was exactly right. And we have this amendment was talked about in, we've asked and met with, like I said, some of the Democrats on the Education Committee, and so we thought this was going to solve the problem. That was why it's in there. So it wasn't like it was just my idea. It was worked on. So if there's more work, I can withdraw the amendment, and we can go to finish that up if that's that's an option.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any further comments? Senator Pratt, are you finished?
No, I think I just left my hand up. But Madam Chair, I support the amendment.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Madam Chair, I support it, too. I think it would be better to place the amendment on and then let the author continue to work on it as we pass the bill. That's what we've done for many other cases.
Mm-hmm. I do think that's what we're going to do, just because there has been a significant amount of work with Senator Dornick and members across the aisle on this, and I know you will continue to figure this out if there is an adjustment that can be made, but my hope was that we would focus on the fiscal note. But with that, Senator Ingebrigtsen renews his motion on the 8th.
Madam Chair, Kent. Thank you. Just very briefly, so what is the plan with this bill? If the idea is that we're working on it, we're hearing it now in finance. We're hearing that there are other bills that have good ideas, so you know, it sounds like we're trying to force things together for this meeting to take a vote on it and pass it out of finance, but what's the plan here to really address the very serious issue that all of our schools are facing in terms of substitute teachers?
Well, Senator Kent, I think you're asking for a broader discussion, and the next bill will address some of those issues also. This is a piece that I think we should have move forward. I believe the A7 amendment is the product of the work that Senator Dornick has done to appease both sides and to address some issues. He will continue to work with Mr. Luisi on this, and perhaps there has to be adjustment. Perhaps there is an amendment to take it out on the floor. But we would like to get this to the floor and keep this moving. Senator Kemp.
Well, Madam Chair, and that's my point. If we're sending this to the floor and we're seeing serious problems with what we're invariably going to be putting on this with this A7 amendment to make it even more problematic, I just don't feel like that is the right thing. I mean, we're being asked, I know we're supposed to be looking at the fiscal notes, but we in this committee are being asked to look at a policy amendment, and which is clearly problematic. So I think this is ill-advised as a process, and I think it would be a much better idea to hold this entire bill right now so that we can do the work on it before it comes through the Finance Committee and gets sent onto the floor. But having said that, I would request a roll call on the A7 amendment.
Roll call requested. Roll call granted. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Dornick has expressed willingness to make sure we get this right and to empower Pelsby to work with them to make sure that the language that's being put forth can actually be executed. And so let's have this language in public. Let's make sure the school districts and the folks at Pelsby who are going to have to implement this can see it and bring solid, actionable responses to this amendment. And I'll support the amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Anybody else? Okay. There has been a roll call requested. The clerk will take the roll. Ms. Johnson?
Chair Rosen?
Chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Ingebrigtsen?
Aye.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Benson?
Aye.
Senator Champion?
No.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Kent?
No.
Senator Kipmeyer?
Aye.
Senator Lopez Franzen?
No.
Senator Pratt?
Aye.
There being 6 ayes and 4 noes, the amendment is adopted. Okay, members, back to the fiscal note. And Ms. Hofer, would you like to just run through that, please?
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, in your packet, you should have the revised fiscal note for Senate File 2861. There are 2 fiscal effects of this bill. So the first is in Section 2. So with this on the fiscal note, you'll see a line that says ARP State Fiscal Recovery. And it shows a cost of $44,000 in fiscal year 2022. So this money was actually already approved as part of the LCRC process on February 2nd. So it's $44,000. That's not a new cost, but has already been appropriated. And this money is for IT work on the educator licensing system. And so this money is going to be used for portions of Section 2, which would require removing the bachelor's degree requirement from the application, adding a district verification portion to the application, and allowing Pelsby staff to issue a license before a background check is complete. The second fiscal effect is for Section 3 of the bill. And so this is what you see on the general fund line. And I would actually suggest that members look at page 2 of the fiscal note, because I think this actually shows what's happening a little bit more accurately. So if you look at the table on the top of page 2, if you look at the bottom where it says 2 revenues, so you'll see general fund, and you'll see there's a reduction of $36,000 in fiscal year 2022 and a reduction of $182,000 in fiscal years 23 and 24. So this would actually be a reduction in teacher licensure revenue for those 3 fiscal years, because Section 3 would allow districts to apply jointly with a substitute teaching candidate, and therefore the substitute teacher would not need to apply for a license. So as a result, there would be a reduction in licensure revenue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Hofer. And Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair and members, I think Ms. Hofer covered the fiscal note pretty well. I'll just highlight that given that the fiscal note does reference the state fiscal recovery funds. Members will recall that when Senator Pratt's bill came through, that the Senate position now spends all the state fiscal recovery fund dollars, including the reversal of the revenue replacement. These dollars that are highlighted on the tracking here were part of the governor's allocation, sometimes colloquially referred to as the governor's allocation. It's actually the COVID-19 fiscal recovery fund or account. And that money was part of the $425 million that was set aside for allocation for COVID response as part of the state government bill last year. So it is accounted for. It doesn't overspend the amount that the Senate has allocated.
Any questions to that? And on a side note, there's about $3.5 million left in that pot of money. And we can review those expenses at some time if you'd like. Okay, any questions on the fiscal note? Okay. Mr. Director Uni, is there anything that you would like to cover too that you didn't cover with the A7 amendment?
Madam Chair, thanks. And just for the record again, my name is Adoshi. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I just want to add a few more comments in light of the fiscal note. As Ms. Hofer mentioned, the governor had taken through the LCRC process at the beginning of February some allocations for Palsby, the $44,000 that was discussed for the IT upgrades. Additionally, on top of that, $100,000 was for staffing. And that goes to staffing to process licenses, and that would be associated with the proposal that the governor and the department the proposal that we support that Senator Isaacson is carrying in the Senate and Representative Hassan has carried in the House. And that staffing support of $100,000 would allow Palsby to process sub-licenses with a cap of 5 days turnaround. The IT efforts would also support that. And I just wanted to highlight the fact that the 5-day maximum time that they would take to process these sub licenses would actually be quicker than the time that is allowed in Senator Dornick's bill as it's currently written. That requires the statewide background check to be completed before a sub can be put into the classroom. And though that's really comes down to kind of the length that Pelsby takes, or the time that Pelsby takes, because the background check takes that long, that's around 10 to 14 days, as I understand it, before a sub would be able to be in the classroom. Under the governor's bill, it would take 5 days maximum. Pelsby could issue the license pending that statewide background check. However, at the same time, the district would complete their local background check. And so the teacher would be in the classroom with a background check to be completed just at the state level. And so it does seem that the bill in front of the committee is about Pelsby issuing a license because of the time it takes. But with the resourcing that was provided under the federal funds by the governor through the LCRC process in February, as well as the 5-day cap, we believe that proposal is a more expeditious as well as a safe process that assures that any misconduct is tracked by Pelsby per the conversation that was had earlier. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Director Uni. Are there any questions for the director? Okay. With that, I see no further questions. I believe that we have a motion from Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, I move the Senate File 2861 as amended to pass and refer to
General Orders.
General Orders.
Yeah. On that motion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Kent.
Roll call, please.
Roll call requested. Roll call granted. Ms. Johnson will take the roll.
Chair Rosen.
Chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Ingebrigtsen.
Aye.
Senator Marty.
No.
Senator Benson.
Aye.
Senator Champion.
No.
Senator Johnson.
Aye.
Senator Kent.
No.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Aye.
Senator Lopez Franzen.
No.
Senator Pratt.
Aye.
There being 6 ayes and 4 noes, the motion prevails. Okay, thank you, Senator Dornick, for that. And I know you
will prevail.
I think this bill is extremely important for the crisis that we're in, that we've been in a long time with our teachers. And I know you'll continue your discussions with Mr. Luisi. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for coming to the committee. Thank you, Ms. Hover. Senator Nelson. Senator Nelson, I saw you sitting over there, and for some reason in my head, I thought we were working on education again this morning, even though I did mention it was Nurse Licensure Compact, but my apologies. So to Senate File 2302.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is great to be in front of the Finance Committee as one of your former members. And Senator Rosen, I had a number of those education thoughts running through my head, too, during that last testimony. But today, Chair Rosen and members, I want to thank you for hearing Senate File 2302. This is known as the Nurse Licensure Compact. And Madam Chair, do you want someone to move the bill, or would you like me to describe
Senator
it first?
Senator Nelson, yeah, please describe the bill, and then we'll have a motion.
Yes, absolutely. Members, the nurse licensure bill, if enacted, it would allow Minnesota to be a member of the Enhanced Nurse Licensure Compact. The Enhanced Nurse Licensure Compact allows for registered nurses and RNs to have one multi-state license and in the primary state of residency, and to practice in other compact states. While each state's practice laws and discipline. It's important to note that currently 39 states and territories already participate in the Nurse Licensure Compact. We are, again, an outlier in this. And so the Minnesota, interestingly enough, the Minnesota nurses themselves want this Nurse Licensure Compact. The 2022 Board of Nursing survey found that nearly 80% of Minnesota nurses with an active license want to participate in the compact. Fewer than 10% were opposed. So roughly by 10-to-1 margin, nurses want to be part of this compact. And it's important because, number one, healthcare is changing. We've seen great advances in telehealth, something that you, Madam Chair, have been very involved in. Patients are increasingly mobile. Nurses currently are often practicing across state lines, or they use telehealth to provide that care across state lines. And we know that nurses are the closest contact with the patient and that continuation of care, continuity of care. And so it's important that we make sure that patients have access to those nurses. The Nurse Licensure Compact makes sense. As I said, 39 other states are already members. Again, Minnesota is an outlier. And you might recall this committee, Madam Chair, you'll recall that we have done other compacts. Mm-hmm. For example, the physician compact. It's been highly successful. Why would we not allow nurses the same opportunity? And as I said, it is supported by nurse providers. It's supported by the military, their families. Can you imagine being a military family, moving, and every time you move to a new state, the nurse would need to get a new licensure or varying licensures. And also, it's important to note that this compact also has the support of the regulatory agencies. It's proven to be safe and effective. It's important that we help Minnesota nurses keep competitive with their peers. And it also is important that the state of Minnesota can continue to lead to be a national and international healthcare leader. We need to provide this flexibility. And members, you do have a list in your packets, I believe, of the nearly 60 supporters of this compact. Now, I will not read all of them into the record, but I know you all can read, but I do want to, Madam Chair, just list a few, and I would like the members to think about the significance of these endorsers. And you also have letters of support as well. First of all, the National Council on the State Board of Nursing supports this. The National Council, the Regulatory Council, Mayo Clinic, Minnesota Hospital Association, Allina, Central Care, Children's, Essentia, Fairview, Gillette Children's, Health Partners, North Memorial, Sanford, Care Providers of Minnesota, the Leading Age of Minnesota, the Department of Defense State Liaison's Office, Medical Alley, Minnesota Business Partnership, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Minnesota Council of Health Plans, National Association of Military Families. We could go on and on. Members, there is great support for this because it makes safe, it is safe, it makes sense, it keeps our nurses competitive with their peers, it allows for more seamless and better patient care. I'll just give you one example. In my district, during the what I would call a pilot of this nurse licensure compact, when Governor Walz declared an emergency and by executive order allowed nurses to practice across state lines without getting a multi-state license. Number one, there were no disciplinary actions, but an example in my district, that increased the nursing pool by 10%. That is an important thing when you have a disaster or a pandemic. We needed all hands on deck, and the Nurse Licensure Compact can help with that. So I will stand for any questions. But it is time that Minnesota join the other 39 states and jurisdictions that are allowing their nurses to practice with a multi-state license. And one thing I must say about that multi-state license, the evidence shows that there are fewer disciplinary actions for nurses with a multi-state license than nurses with a single state license. So there is no evidence at all. In fact, contrary, the evidence shows how important the Nurse Licensure Compact is both for patients and for nurses.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Yeah, very good. I was just noted by Mr. Fisher that the list was not, we all have it here physically, but the list is not posted. But it's a very impressive list, as you said, 58 supporters and endorsers, and it goes, it's very extensive. So if anybody does want that, we can get that posted. But and there, as you said, there are letters of support. Are there any questions for Senator Nelson on this point before we could turn to the fiscal note? Would you like to talk about this fiscal note, or Mr. Albrecht? Have him come up.
I could speak about it, but I think Mr. Albrecht could probably speak about it quicker. So if he could come up and speak to this, that'd be wonderful.
Good morning, Mr. Albrecht. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Starting on, page one of the fiscal note, you'll note that there is a fiscal effect in the current biennium of $157,000 and then an effect of $280,000 each year in the next biennium. On page two, in the block on the top, the effect is the result of two things. Expenditures of $150,000 a year in 2023, and then $6,000 a year in 24 and 25. The biggest effect is the result of a revenue loss of $274,000 a year on net in 24 and 25, which I'll talk about in just a minute. At the bottom of the page begins the explanation of the $157,000 cost, and you can see there that there are costs attributable to implementing the Nurse Licensure Compact, a variety of administrative costs. And then the last item there is the ongoing piece of $6,000 per year, which is a fee payable to the National Council of the State Boards of Nursing for for our Board of Nursing to be a member, I believe. And then in the middle of that page there, after the table, is the discussion of the revenues. Importantly, in the middle of the first paragraph there, it says that the board currently collects sufficient revenue to cover the increased appropriation and will not need to raise fees. It also discusses after that the reduction in fees because people who don't live in Minnesota would no longer have to pay a Minnesota license fee. That amount is about $757,000. And then there are some Minnesota residents who currently also hold a license in a nurse licensure compact state who would instead apply for a multi-state license in Minnesota. And the amount for those folks is $483,000, and that's where the net loss of revenue of $274,000 comes from. You can see there's a little math there at the very end of that discussion of revenues that shows how they got to the 274.
Thank you, Mr. Albrecht. Any questions to that, to the fiscal note? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I would like to, on the fiscal note, page 3 of 4, it says, and you may have covered this, but as I was reading, so any decrease in licensure revenue would be offset with an increase in the initial license fee for a multi-state license or the license renewal fee. Could you explain that just a little bit more, how that impacts the revenue?
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, that is on page 3, the last paragraph there talks about the number of Minnesota licensees who currently hold at least one license in a nurse licensure compact state.
Yes.
Yes, and then,
yes, it's in the paragraph titled Revenues, and it's about the middle of the paragraph.
So near the end of that section, the paragraphs aren't separated very well. It's the one that begins, Minnesota has 4,600 licensees.
It's a paragraph above that, in the middle. 1, 2, 3.
Right, four. So those are the, is that your question?
Well, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Any decrease in licensure revenue would be offset with an increase in the initial license fee for a multi-state license or the license renewal fee.
Right, that's the next paragraph that they're talking about.
All right.
So they're saying those two paragraphs.
It's Mr. Albrecht.
Sorry, Madam Chair. they're saying that those two paragraphs work together.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
That's good enough for now. Thank you.
Thank you.
No.
Okay. Senator Nelson, I have heard that back in my district too, that they are paying, there's a hourly wage of $275 to bring in nurses. Mm-hmm. And my district, of course, borders the Iowa border. And would something like this help with that huge expense for our hospitals?
Sure, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
I think you're probably talking about traveling nurses,
right?
And we're seeing that. And I would say anytime we can get more nurses on the ground is a good thing, and it's going to help with the shortage. But I also want to be very transparent that it's not the be-all and end-all solution when you have a pandemic. We were in the midst of a pandemic, and we needed more nurses than we had. We still need more nurses, even though, thankfully, we are on the tail end of this pandemic. But it is true that states who had the nurse licensure compact were better positioned to meet the exorbitant pandemic need than states that did not. We had to be at the end of the line, so to speak, when there were not those executive orders that allowed for basically the nurse licensure compact on a temporary basis. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the traveling nurses are still an issue, but the nurse licensure compact will help with that. Mm. Some hospitals are also developing traveling nurse policies for their own nurses, so that if the nurses aren't on shift and they want to be a traveling nurse to work when they're not on their shift, you know, they can do that. So our employers, our hospitals are also working. We need all the tools in the toolbox, folks. This is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I know that the governor, I believe, in the pot of money, the COVID response money, spent $40 million on a temporary staffing agency for this very reason. So, like you said, we need all the tools in the toolbox. Senator Lopez-Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Nelson and Mr. Albright, I'm trying to look through. I mean, this seems to be a very simple FISCO note, and I think this is a more complicated issue. So, and my question was in line with what Senator Rosen mentioned about traveling nurses and the cost of bringing them to Minnesota during this pandemic. I don't have numbers on that, but I would have wished that this FISCO note would have been a little bit more in depth, and I'm not sure why it's not, in terms of that interaction of what we're paying right now for those nurses in the system through reimbursements from the state and what this bill would do in terms of savings. I think that would give a better picture of whether this is actually a tool that would help, because right now that information is lacking. I'm not sure if that's coming out correctly, but that's what I'm trying to figure out. What would this do to save healthcare costs for hospitals in the state when it comes to reimbursements? And so that's a question in terms of the fiscal note, if Mr. Albright has any indication of why that information can't be included here.
Mr. Albright.
Madam Chair and Senator Lopez-Franson, I don't think that those costs would show up in this fiscal note, given that the only thing that the bill affects is licensure for those nurses. Those costs that the hospitals and nursing homes are having to pay would be addressed in a fiscal note of this nature.
And Madam Chair, just to add something to that, yes, that's exactly correct. And just to be clear, this fiscal note is a function of licensure, a function of the number of Minnesota nurses who currently also have nurses license in other states, and it's a function of nurses from other states who also have a Minnesota licensure. That's what the math is all about here. It's very simple. And the ongoing cost is very negligible. What we would be interested in, of course, is any ongoing costs. Ongoing costs are $6,000 a year. And of course, to Senator Lopez-Franson's point about how does this impact costs, this lowers costs for nurses who want to practice and need to practice their craft, and it also lowers the cost for the employers who often help pay for those additional state licensures and the additional time and CEs to get that. And I do want to mention that obviously every nurse must pass the national right. licensing board exam and graduate from a nationally accredited institution.
Yes, thank you. That's a very clarifying. We forget that sometimes. Senator Lopez-Franson.
Thank you. Just follow up. So the testimony has been part of what we heard, that this would help with those costs. So that's why I'm trying to match the comments from Senator Nelson as she was introducing the bill to the FISCO note, just so we have a broader sense of what we're talking about. And anecdotally, I mean, most of us have a hospital or a clinic in our districts, and we're hearing from nurses, at least I am, where they're practicing next to a nurse who might not have the same training and might be paid two or three times more during the pandemic. And my concern is that this would exacerbate that in a way, not just because they're trained differently, because one of the claims in the introductory comments, it said it's safe and that it'll keep competitiveness. But if there's difference in wages, I just have concern that this would actually exacerbate an issue of having our state nurses who live in Minnesota, train in Minnesota, accredited and licensed in Minnesota, being at a disadvantage to those coming from out of state. And in terms of safety, that's my other concern too, that just opening up the borders for folks to come in, that we would actually be compromising our standards of how we train nurses and licensed training in Minnesota. So I have concerns about this bill. It's come up before. We have implemented it at an emergency basis, as was mentioned, with the pandemic and the governor's executive powers, but it's no longer in effect. And what I heard also nationally, that this has been an issue from other states where they bring in nurses from other countries and they actually have lower standards and exacerbate issues around borders. So, you know, there's a reason we have standards. There's a reason Minnesota is at the top in terms of healthcare and delivery and providers, and nurses are a huge part of this equation. And, you know, we've talked about other issues to improve outcomes for nurses, including frontline worker pay, which has been stalled. And we're moving towards a compact trying to solve things. And what we're doing is not acknowledging the big elephant in the room, which is supporting the nurses and what they have learned from this pandemic in Minnesota, and improving not just their morale, but their workplaces, and having them compete with folks coming in the state is not necessarily the direction I've heard from the nurses themselves, that they want to be part of the solution to improving patient care and outcomes. And the other anecdote we've heard is that there are plenty of nurses in Minnesota. They just have decided to retire early because they are not going to be working in conditions that put patient care in jeopardy. So I know this is a finance committee. I've served on Health and Human Services for many years, and it just seems that it's not the most comprehensive solution to fixing the issues that we see with lack of nurses. And in fact, we should be starting to talk about with bonus pay that we in fact agreed and passed and are still delaying. So I'm gonna be voting no for this bill because I don't think this is the right solution and approach. And in fact, we should be talking and delving into the real solutions about healthcare access and healthcare cost. And in this case, nurses are in the forefront, and I'm sure that I'm sure Senator Nelson's heard from them too about this bill, and there's some letters of opposition as well. And I'm really concerned that this is the solution we have learned from this pandemic, that this is a solution to fixing the workforce shortages in nursing. And I would hope that we would take some action in the frontline worker pay that includes nurses as part of the solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Lopez-Franson. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Lopez-Franson. You mentioned kind of a several issues, and I want to be clear. You had mentioned my comments, I think, regarding pay or increasing costs. I think you may have misunderstood my words about keeping nurses competitive. This is not about the disparity between traveling nurses who come in to fill the gap when we do not have enough nurses on staff. My words about competitiveness are allowing our nurses, the over 80% of Minnesota licensed nurses who want to be part of this compact, to allow them to remain competitive with their peers from 39 other states who are able to practice with one multi-state license in states across our nation. I also heard you mention something about nurses from other countries. That is not included in this licensure compact, members. This licensure compact is for the United States, for only states who also participate in the compact, who have the same high training, the same standards, the same National Board of Nursing licensure requirements, testing, and education requirements. Minnesota can continue to still have control over its nurse licensure. The point is, are we going to allow Minnesota nurses to be as competitive as their peers in 39 other jurisdictions and states. I think that's important. The safety concerns have totally been debunked. They have been debunked by experience. They have been debunked. I encourage you to look at the April 22 Journal of Nursing article, the research study done there between disciplinary actions with nurses with a multi-state license and nurses with a single state license. It is compelling. The disciplinary actions are half of the single state licensures of those who have a multi-state licensure. And then I also want to just kind of really debunk this idea if there's any sort of that this is a partisan thing. Members, it is not. I will draw your attention to the Pennsylvania State Nurse Licensure Compact. They had the Pennsylvania State Nurse License, Pennsylvania State Nurses Association had opposed the compact until recently, in which they changed their opposition, and I'll be clear, the Nurses Association is the only opposition. They changed their opposition to favor. It has passed in that very labor-friendly state. And you don't need to take my word for it. I want you to think about the governor of New York, very pro-labor governor, very pro-labor state, just like Minnesota. And in New York State, the governor not only funded the Nurse Licensure Compact in her budget proposal, she also put it in her state of the state address. Members, this bill is good for patients. It is patients. Patients are the only consideration. That's where I come from. We believe patients are the consideration. There are no other considerations. It's about the patients. Patients deserve to be able to have high-quality trained nurses at their bedside. And our state needs to get on and join the other 39 other states that have adopted participation in this compact.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just back to the fiscal aspect here, there is an opposition letter that we do have in our packets here. And this is for Senator Nelson or anybody else that might be able to answer that. But the second point of the MNA letter says the Board of Nursing would have be insufficiently funded to conduct their work of safety and accountability. Just wondering, have any of the 39 other states had any significant impact their boards of nursing, or has there been any safety aspects within those other 39 states regarding the Board of Nursing?
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you know, our fiscal note shows that the Minnesota Board of Nursing does have the finances to not raise fees to implement this. So I want to be clear about that. That's our Minnesota situation right now. Regarding safety, I am totally unaware of any safety concerns. As I said, you can get the pending article in the National Journal of Nursing, and you will get a replete research study of what has happened in states with nurse licensure compact and states which do not have multi-state licensure. And you will see that the safety issue has totally, it's non-existent, it's been debunked. In fact, if you're interested in safety, you would definitely want to have a multi-licensure state. That is not an issue. Either of those are not an issue. Thank you for asking, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Thank you, Senator Nelson. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think some of this has already been covered, so forgive me. But, you know, I got connected with a nurse in my community that I respect, and she raised two issues that I think have been addressed, but I want to highlight just real quick. You talked about the training that was needed. Her concern was that we would be outsourcing care to lesser trained nurses from other states. That sounds like that's not the experience that Minnesota's seen.
Oh, it's not possible. Not possible.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. And then her other concern was the compact includes states like Texas, Mississippi, Tennessee facing nursing shortages, and that we would be drawing nurses out of Minnesota to these other states. Have we seen that as a real concern or outcome?
Senator Nelson.
I do not see that as a potential outcome. There are nursing shortages. There will continue to be nursing shortages. But I don't believe that we should keep Minnesota nurses from being able to practice in other states for which they, by us being in the nurse licensure compact, they should be able to practice across state lines. And, you know, we, as I said, we have allowed that. That's a very good question, Senator Pratt. You know, we have allowed physicians to have a physician compact. We have other compacts for other medical professionals. And why would we limit our nurses? Why would we limit our nurses? The medical professionals closest to the patient. And when we think about patient care, nurses are that first line. And I don't want to lose sight of the importance of telehealth as well. Our nurses need to be able to continue treating, seeing their patients via telehealth. And these patients are from all over the nation. We should allow our nurses to do that. And there's one item that I forgot to mention, Senator Pratt, and that has to do with nursing education. And the University of Minnesota is one of the premier nursing education facilities in our nation. And the dean in our other committees has testified to how important it is as we build this pipeline of nurses that we be able to also continue that education, which is oftentimes online, or there are nurses from other states who are coming into the state of Minnesota for their nursing education. We need to continue to build that pipeline, and currently, nursing educators need to have a license for every state in which their students would be choosing to practice. And so we just, members, our current licensure system is 100 years old. Our lives have changed. Medicine has changed. How we receive medical care has changed. We are a mobile society. We have advancements now that for telehealth that even a year ago were not possible. We must allow our excellent Minnesota nursing staff to be unshackled from this 100-year-old licensure system. Please, let's let them practice with all the tools available, and let us give the best of patient care. It's just time. It's past time, but there's just no reason at all to not pass this much-needed compact.
Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that, Senator Nelson, because, you know, I had been going through the packet and saw the letter from the Dean of Nursing. And just for members in the public record to highlight, she, in favor of the Nurse Licensure Compact, highlights that this has been a successful model for over 20 years, ensures the safety of our nurses with a criminal background check, requires nurses under the multi-state license, they must practice according to Minnesota law.
Correct.
And I think that's important for us to remember, and requires participation in a national database to make sure that they have the correct licensure. So, Madam Chair, I respect my constituent, but I think this, and Senator Nelson, thank you for doing the work on this to build a strong coalition, because I think this helps us be informed as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Pratt. And Senator Nelson, I think this bill has been around a long time. And of course, with our pandemic, it has brought it to the forefront that we need to do something different. And you are obviously very passionate about this. I wish our colleagues that are on Zoom could see this. Perhaps this letter is posted now. Please take a look at this. The 58 members that are in support of this national licensure is impressive. I mean, the first, you know, 13 are our hospital system. So it is a situation where it's critical that we get this done. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I've seen how many of the hospitals are supporting this. I'm concerned, and I strongly concerned about this bill because I think it's not taking into account the nurses. You said, Senator Nelson said, only the nurses were opposed. The one advocacy group I've seen, whose patient advocacy group, Elder Voices Family Advocates, they had a letter. I looked at the letters that came up in HHS, and that letter, the one advocacy group for patients is saying, hey, we're concerned about this. Yeah, we know the nursing homes like it, but we as patient advocates don't like it. And the biggest thing I have concern about for patient safety is the way we treat the people we have here. When you're talking about these disparities between traveling nurses and everything else, I've talked to so many nurses who are leaving early. I mean, I saw one of the letters talked about how we have a third more nurses per capita than other states do. We got more nurses, but they're not practicing because they're tired of the double shifts, forced double shifts. They're tired of not getting their breaks. I talked to one nurse who said that she had, this is several, a couple years ago, she was, this is pre-COVID. She said that she had worked at the hospital she was at for like 17 years, 18 years. And she said that she had fewer lunch breaks in those 18 years than she had in the previous 9 months at the same hospital. Why? Because she had switched to a job where she was in a surgical unit in an operating room where apparently federal law, I don't know the details, but apparently federal law requires certain staffing that a nurse has to be, or two nurses or whatever have to be present in the type of surgery. So if they have an 8-hour surgery, they had to give the nurse time off. So they had to schedule somebody else in so she could eat her lunch. She said she went in 17 years, she had less than 9 months worth of lunches. That's once a month she was getting a lunch break, which is supposed to be required by law. We have nurses who are saying they feel unsafe. They feel absolutely unsafe and because they can't take any time off because their patients don't have enough coverage. I know the hospitals are saying they like this. They seem to not want to care about their own nurses. And that's what's bothering me. I've talked to so many nurses, and you ask nurses around. You ask the hospital nurses how many of them pack a lunch or a meal for the day during the shift. They bring it into work, and they eat it in the car on the way home because they didn't have time to take a break. I mean, I think the treatment we're giving the nurses and then saying, oh, well, we can bring in more people. Is this the solution? I think Senator Nelson was saying how Texas and other states also have nursing shortages. So in effect, we're trying to do this is going to say, well, we in those states, we all have shortages, but we're going to allow this thing to come in here and maybe we can patch up the pieces. Well, why don't we take advantage of the fact we got more nurses than other states do and take them, let them work in a humane way. I've heard from so many nurses feel they can't treat their patients safely and they're getting burned out from it. So I just think that this is a cover for failing to address the needs of the nurses. And so I'm not surprised the hospitals all support this. I wish we had something that was good for the patients and the nurses and made them not leave in their profession because they're not being cared for. But to me, this is just an end run around that. Maybe we can have the fix that we can have more people come in from elsewhere. But what about the people from Indiana and Texas and everywhere else who may need nurses there? Why don't we try and take care of it with the people we have here? We have good people here wanting to work, but they don't feel they're respected. They don't feel they get a chance to have a safe workplace. I think that's the issue. Senator Murphy's got an excellent bill on that. I think that's what we ought to be doing.
Senator Marty, we'll stick to, let's stick to the fiscal note. Let's stick to this bill, please. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm just saying that I think this bill is not a fix for it. There are other fixes that can address the problem and can do it for the safety of the patients and the staff in the hospitals. And this is not the way to fix it. So that's not to the fiscal note. The fiscal note is, yes, there's some lost revenue. And yes, the Nursing Board of Nursing thinks they can cover the cost of this. To me, that's small potatoes compared to the unsafe conditions we're putting in our own hospitals, not because there aren't enough nurses available in Minnesota, but because we won't treat them in a way that makes them feel safe working there.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Senator Nelson, a response? Or?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I wish I could print out for you the April 2022 Journal of Nursing article. I think you should look for that as it comes out. I'll be sure to send it out. But I will tell you that it shows there is no safety concern. In fact, as I noted, the Nurse Licensure Compact nurses have half the safety issues as single state nurse licensures. So there is no safety issue, members. But in fact, the evidence is just the same. In fact, Governor Walz, in his executive authority, are you saying, Senator Marty, that you think Governor Walz put patients in jeopardy by allowing nurses to come and practice in Minnesota during this pandemic? I don't believe that. The evidence shows just the opposite. And if you're talking about shortages, I can guarantee you that nurses are glad when other nurses are able to come in and help with those double shifts, providing an extra set of skills and hands and people on the ground. That is important. And as I noted, just during the kind of like pilot, like folks, we had a pilot about the nurse licensure compact. It was during the pandemic. And there were no adverse reactions. And in my district, it allowed for 10% increase in nurses coming in to help relieve those shortages. But, you know, let's look at Massachusetts. Okay, that is another strong Democrat, pro-labor state. Let's see what happened in Massachusetts with the nurse licensure compact. Of course, according to the Massachusetts Health Policy Commission that studied the issue, joining the compact, according to the commission, does the following. It helps to fill short-term staffing needs and facilitates telehealth. Those are two important issues in our state as well. Let us learn from the 39 other states who have already embarked on this modernization of nurse licensure. Let us learn from the pilot that Governor Walz put in place with his executive orders that allowed nurses to come into our state without a Minnesota nurse licensure. In fact, this is more stringent because it also requires background checks. So I'm just telling you, I appreciate the concerns of those who support nurses, and last of all, we must not, this is what the nurses want. 80% of them want to be part of this compact. Who are we in this legislature to sit here and say, I am going to disregard 80% of the Minnesota nurses who have said, I want to be part of this compact. I want to be able to use my skills across state lines. I want to be able to use my skills to continue to serve my patients when they go back home to their state that is not Minnesota. So I appreciate the concerns, but the evidence does not support those concerns.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Senator Marty, response, or yeah. You didn't have your hand up?
Yes, Madam Chair, I think Senator Nelson missed what I was saying. I was not saying that the people coming in were making the situation more dangerous. What I'm saying is we're making the situation more dangerous by understaffing our hospitals when we have more than enough nurses here. We're understaffing them and we're burning out the nurses. That's where the safety occurs. That's where the safety problem is, by understaffing the situation. Working people double shifts against their will, not giving them time for breaks. That's where we're overworking. They have plenty of time for breaks. They just got to leave their patients alone, and the nurses care too much to do that. My concern isn't that this is going to be, oh, all of a sudden it's going to be a huge danger. My concern is that we're undercutting the nurses here who need help and need support, and they're begging the hospitals for more. The one patient group that I see here in the list, in the testifiers at HHS, was saying, we're very concerned about this. A lot of the nurses are saying the same thing. They're saying, we don't have the support we need. It's not we need more people coming in. And boy, actually, I think if you have a morale question, if you have somebody coming in who's working next to you who's getting paid twice as much, I think that's kind of a morale beater, a thing that wears you down. But the concern I'm hearing from nurses is they just can't take it. Talk to nurses who've been around for 25, 30 years. They said it didn't used to be this way, but this just-in-time minimal staffing is unsafe. That's my concern about the safety. And this bill does nothing to address that. It just exacerbates it. And frankly, it beats down efforts of the nurses to try and get more support for it here. So I think that you're totally missing what I was saying about the safety. The safety, I think, is the way our hospitals are treating their nursing staff and the shortages they have here. It's not a shortage of nurses. It's a shortage of nurses who are willing to work in unsafe conditions.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, thank you for bringing this forward. And I'm wondering if a nurse comes from North Dakota across the line from Fargo into Moorhead because there's a shortage there and they're called upon to work. Do they get paid less than the normal employees for that particular hospital?
Senator Nelson.
I cannot answer that question. And this is not about salaries. This is not about working conditions. This is about people. This is about getting more nurses mm-hmm. available to treat Minnesota patients. And so I think that is a reasonable question. But again, those are issues for the individual employers. And certainly, Senator Marty has mentioned there are other bills that deal with many of the other concerns that he had. But members, we should not let the perfect be the enemy of the good here. This is a good bill that is working. And it doesn't solve every issue, and it might not solve the issue that you mentioned, Senator Ingebrigtsen. But neither does it impact the patient care. This is about bodies, getting people on the ground. And the one thing I would say is, you know, we're not a country or a state where we conscript people and tell them, this is where you have to work. You have to work because we want you to. No, no, no. People choose where to work. And we want them. We want to provide choices for more nurses to practice in our state. But we cannot lose sight of the fact that we should be respecting our nurses, 80% who said they want this, and also giving them the opportunity to practice their craft across state lines. I just think it's time to get in the current century.
Madam Chair,
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Real quickly, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator. I'm just assuming that they are not going to get paid less when I keep hearing that they're getting huge amounts of money per hour traveling around nursing where they're short staffed. But I always try and put myself in the position of, you know, I'm a patient in the hospital, and I see this nurse come to work, and all of a sudden I see 20 hours, 24 hours gone, and the same nurse is there. Now, I'm not so sure that the care is going to be as good as having somebody come in that's fresh. Mm-hmm. So I think this is an excellent, excellent idea. I think as far as when it comes to patient care, it's a great thing. Senator Marty talks about understaffing of private entities. I don't think we should get into that. You know, I don't think that's our business. But this definitely is our business, allowing the movement of nurses to come and go in the state of Minnesota. So I fully support this. I think it's a great bill, and thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Okay, I don't see any more questions or hands. Senator Nelson, closing comments, please.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee, for the thorough discussion of how important this is. I think we have covered all of the bases. The bottom line is this is good for patients. It's good for patient care. It's good for nurses. Nurses want this. The regulatory bodies want to participate in the Nurse Licensure Compact. Our military families and their members want to participate in the Nurse Licensure Compact. Patients want to participate. Providers want to participate. We need to listen. We need to listen to them. And we need to keep at the forefront what is the best interest of the patient. And that is having that highly qualified nurse at their bedside when needed.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. With that, Senator Benson.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marty.
Mm-hmm. Good. Madam Chair, I was just going to request a roll call and just say I just think this is a terrible idea for patient safety, and I think it's a terrible idea for that. Senator Ingebrigtsen's comments a few minutes ago suggesting, well, we need more nurses at the bedside. Well, that's what we should be addressing, the nurses at the bedside. It's not a shortage here. It's a shortage of hospitals being willing to staff properly, and that's the issue I have concern about. So I strongly oppose it and ask for a roll call.
Roll call requested. A roll call will be granted. Ms. Johnson will take the roll.
Madam Chair,
We need a motion. Senator Benson.
I'll move Senate File 2302 to be recommended to pass and be placed on general orders.
Thank you, Senator Benson. Senator, on that motion, Ms. Johnson, would you please take the roll?
Chair Rosen.
The chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Ingebrigtsen.
Votes aye.
Senator Marty.
Marty votes no.
Senator Benson?
Aye.
Senator Champion?
Champion votes no.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Kent?
No.
Senator Kiffmeyer?
Aye.
Senator Lopez Franzen? Senator Pratt?
Aye.
And Senator Lopez Franzen?
No.
There being six ayes and four noes, the motion prevails, and Senate File 2302 is placed on general orders.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Nelson, and thank you, Mr. Albrecht. With that, members, we have our next hearing is tomorrow. We have Senator Housley's Nursing Home Assistance Bill and Senator Dibble's Light Rail Bill. Any questions? With that, have a wonderful day. The Finance Committee is adjourned.